You attract bees with honey, not butt butter.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 321 for the week of September 21st, 2020. I am Louisiana Recovery David T. Cole, and I'm here with Drinky Poo Will, Sarah D. Bunting.
Guys, watch this.
Sin Wagoneer Tara Ariano.
You want me to pour this milk where?
And Sunny Club member Meredith Haggerty.
I'm here wearing Tuesday socks on a Friday.
Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joining us for the very first time from Vox's The Goods, it is Meredith Haggerty. Hello, Meredith.
Hello, Meredith.
Thanks for having me.
Yay! There we go. That was what I was waiting for. We are here to talk about Fox's new drama, I guess. Definitely a soap. It is called Filthy Rich. It's a remake of a series from New Zealand, of all places. I wish I could say the original starred Lucy Lawless and Jemaine Clement. It did not. The series premise is the Monroe family of New Orleans runs an evangelical TV network that has made them very wealthy. Then patriarch Eugene, who's played by Gerald McCraney, is in his private jet getting entertained by some ladies he is not married to when it crashes somewhere in a Louisiana swamp. His body is not found. He's declared dead. His widow, Margaret, who's played by Kim Cattrall, then finds out that Eugene wanted shares of the company left to his children, which include not just Rose and Eric, who routinely appear on various shows on the network, but also three other adult children that he fathered with women who are not Margaret. She wants to buy these other kids off with a one-time cash payment and an NDA, but Ginger, the one child who always knew who her biological father was, encourages her half-siblings to hold out and make Margaret acknowledge them, which she eventually does on her own terms. So only the first episode is aired. We're going to talk about that one in its entirety. I don't know how spoilery we're going to get beyond that. Just in case, let's go around the horn and quickly just let our listeners know what our overall judgment on this show is. Meredith, should people watch Filthy Rich?
I'm sad to say, as a person who loves trash, like, probably not. I didn't love this trash.
Yeah.
It wasn't trashy enough.
Yeah, that's the problem. Where was the trash? As a devout viewer of ABC's Revenge, like, I wanted more.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, you agree, it sounds like?
I do. I feel like this show took, there's some material here that's interesting, and it took the wrong, like, it focused on the wrong things. It felt like, okay, it's network Righteous Gemstones meets Revenge and a question mark. And it's like, there were a number of character pairings or groupings that I think would have worked better as the central focus versus this like Jesus-y dynasty situation. Yeah. And also like this material needs swear words and butt cracks, and we got neither, and nah. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't mad at it, but I don't care either.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. Meredith, in your tweets leading up to our discussion, you expressed excitement about digging in as you called her, La Cattrall. And I do think that she is doing the most to keep the show aloft in as much as it is. But has the production fairly spread out the workload, would you say?
Absolutely not. She's basically the only person on the show, as far as I can tell, even though there's all these other like beings around her. But I kind of like Kim Cattrall's not doing the accent consistently, which is a shame.
No.
And she just doesn't seem like she's having fun, actually. But she's the only one doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
At all. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the acting is really bad. Like really bad.
I don't know if it's bad. Everything's just flat. Everything about this show is flat. Like, it doesn't really seem to want to elevate itself out of whatever, wherever it is right now. Like, I was telling Tara, my expectations for this, you know, a show called Filthy Rich, it is about, you know, a mega church organization. I was expecting much more camp and sort of dramedy elements. And I said to Tara, I feel like whatever the modern 2020 equivalent is of a Mark Cherry, Desperate Housewives vibes, that's what this show, for me, I thought was going to inhabit, and it didn't. It was just like it's not really funny, and it's not really soapy, and it's not a drama. Like, I don't know what space it's trying to inhabit, but it's just not doing a very good job of it. And I just kind of left feeling very underwhelmed, and like it was just like Nebraska, very flat and boring.
Also, for a show called Filthy Rich, like, I didn't even feel like there were enough markers of their filthy richness. Like, I mean, on Righteous Gemstones, right from the very first episode, and granted, like, this is a Fox show and that was an HBO show, obviously there's going to be a big discrepancy in budget, but that was very right from the start in your face about, like, what these people are spending their money on. And here it's like, okay, these people are, like, moderately wealthy, but, like, I just didn't think they were that gross. As Dave said, it was, like, it was at, like, a 4, and it needed to be at, like, a 22 for it to fulfill the name, and it didn't get there.
Yeah, it feels like the show's not mean enough, kind of, which I hate to say, but...
Mm-hmm.
And also by this time, televangelist equals bad. Like, yes, thank you. Like, welcome to 40 years ago. Like, we've all, if that's the main thrust of your storyline, like, you got to come up with other side gigs to make this more interesting. And so far that hasn't happened. Like, this just doesn't have any kick, any spice to it. And it just like really just flop, flop, flop on the dock.
I feel like I don't know if Kim Cattrall's character is supposed to be super manipulative and smart. Like, you sort of think she is, but also then why did she have all of the illegitimate children come together at once so they could meet and unionize? Like, what kind of, that's not what a matriarch does. Like, you know, later on, she's a little bit conniving, but from the start, she's just sort of like going with the flow and really opens herself up to these bastards, as she calls them.
Yeah, that's a great point. If she knows where they are to go and serve them, like, just go to them individually and make the offer. Don't bring them. I didn't even think of that. You're so right.
No, who wouldn't do that? Like, Dowager Countess. That's kind of like power play mind she needs to have to operate in this environment. She doesn't.
Yeah. And she doesn't even have her kids on her side solidly. Like, her daughter hates her. Her daughter, whose name I could never remember because she's Rose. Not a character, really. Rose, sure. And her son, Broadway guy. Both of them like sort of treat her with contempt. So she doesn't even like have her ranks closed. It's just like, you know, where is the center of power on this show? I feel like you need that for something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. The one campy moment that I thought succeeded, and Sarah, I wanted to get your read on it, was when they show Margaret, Kim Cattrall, secretly smoking in a rubber glove. Because she's not a smoker. She is smoking. There's a difference, and she doesn't want to stain her hand. As someone who has smoked, I don't want to call you a smoker. What was your take on that moment?
I thought that was that was like the most Southern seeming thing anyone did. Like, I understand why the writing thinks that this has to be a Southern family, but like, since she can't do the accent, why not just have her, you know, she married into this, right?
Yeah.
So why not just have her be from wherever she's going to be from? Middle Atlantica. Well, that's fine. The accent was a problem. The kids weren't consistent with it either. But as for the smoking thing, like, that was a very... I don't know. That just seemed like a very Southern passive aggressive almost way of being with your own flaws. And then that she's like doing it in the plant as well. I was also a little confused as to like what we're supposed to think about her and this character's cooking. Like, are we supposed to think she does this all herself? Like, is she also Paula Dean? How are we supposed to feel about her? Like, you know, this actor is doing by far the most work. This character is at the center of everything, and I think we're supposed to, if not sympathize with her, then root for her, whatever she's doing. But it is a 4. Like, she's sort of at a 4 in terms of our sympathies, and she's all over the place. Like, they're trying to do too much with her, and not enough with Steve Harris, who it's nice to see him again, but why are you here? Like, you're here to pick up a paycheck and good for you, but like, make the show about him. He's so much more interesting than anyone else on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Meredith, you brought up the kids being a problem. I think Ginger like is the one who comes closest to having a personality. But you're right. Like even the ones who are Kim Cattrall, the Margaret character's natural, you know, full blooded children. Like we basically know nothing about them, including Eric, whose his whole story is supposed to be like he expected to be named CEO and he's not, and now he's mad. But then the half siblings that come into the picture, other than Ginger, like there's nothing developed with them either. And I just, it seems like such a missed opportunity that we just have like the Ginger Margaret power struggle established and then nothing else spelled out with any of the other kids. So I thought that was a great point that you made.
I mean, the son who's the boxer who gets just like one line and it's basically like, hey, homie, I'll punch your teeth in. Just like, we have done characterization here now, I guess. I wrote down, hey, homie, I'll punch your teeth in because I was like, oh, he spoke. But other than that, he loves his child. So that seems like, what a nuanced character. Really bringing a lot out. When Kim Cattrall is smoking that cigarette, she's just sitting at the top of the stairs. She's not by a window or anything. It's like, why did you stop in the middle of the stairs? Because there's more stairs. And she's just smoking the cigarette, not by an open window, just by a plant. It's like, I don't even know that you've, like, maybe she isn't a smoker because that is a nonsensical way to do that.
Also not in secret, like just out to be seen smoking be so found. She can be called on it.
Yes.
Also, so the pilot was written also and directed by Tate Taylor of The Help fame, which is curious. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess he's also from the South, which is maybe why he got tapped for this. But I don't really see the through line from that to this other than that. It's strange. Seems like a strange choice.
That is odd. I will say to the sort of like Joel Osteen dupe. That is the son's brother-in-law, I guess, who's the preacher for the network. He's almost doing something. He might do something someday if this show lasts very long. But I did like how much he looked like. He looks really like Joel Osteen. Like, they really nailed that, at least.
Yeah, he does.
He looked enough like him that I had to look him up and see if make sure it was not Joel Osteen doing a cameo.
Like, did they get him for this? That's amazing.
Yeah. But ultimately, I mean, I think, you know, Dave said this earlier, like that the idea of rot at the heart of a religious company is not a new idea. And if the whole premise of the show rests on the idea that the exposure of an evangelist's private hypocrisy would ruin his company, like, I think we all agree
around.
We're living in a post-hypocrisy reality. So the power of that is maybe not what it was even 4 years ago, which is when the show started in New Zealand.
Totally.
Yeah, there were so many opportunities to do something more interesting. Like, fine, use this as the jumping off point, but then have Margaret and Ginger, like, team up, Empire style, and have, like, the two sides of the sin coin and, like, work it online and, I don't know, have it be a comedy?
Yeah.
I'm still not sure I would watch it, but it just seemed like... Well, and then why is... Why is, like, marijuana kid trying to kiss Rose? Like, is this brothers and sisters now? Like, why is that supposed to be funny? Like, no. Ooh.
I'm pretty sure he's not actually one of the kids, right? That's why he, like...
He's not.
He suctions the spit out of that coma guy's mouth.
Yeah.
Which, what's that about? I don't care. Like, didn't think about it.
Well, I watched the next episode, but I won't spoil it. But yes, they do establish when the person comes to his door, they say, are you Johnny? He's like, okay. So there is something more going on with that.
I wish Sin Wagon was a little more interesting because it's like almost a very funny, like cartoony, like instead of anything really pornographic, it's like women in milkmaid outfits, which, you know, I understand is probably someone's thing, but it just seems so broad that it could be funnier. Like it could be weirder like that. But instead it's all just like, no, this is what we think sex is like, I guess.
Yeah, this is just, I think we all agree, this is a series of missed opportunities, and it does not seem like it's going to grab the Fox audience that has been primed on the bonkersosity of the 911 franchise, but good try.
Yeah.
And that's Filthy Rich.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara Ariano.
Yes, it is. I'm here to talk about Sing On, which is a new singing competition on Netflix. It is basically karaoke meets The Weakest Link. How it works is people trade off verses, singing a song. Each episode has a different theme, like it's movie night or country or chart toppers or whatever. And the goal is to try to match the original recording equally, to do it as well as you do when you're trying to sing like a karaoke song, a karaoke video game, basically. And the more accurate you are, the more money you add to the pot. And everyone is trying to contribute to the same pot up to a certain point. But then at the end of each song, you also have to vote someone out. And so you either can vote out someone because they didn't add enough to the pot, or because you think they're going to be competition for you down the line, similar to Weakest Link. Boy, it's delightful. It's also hosted by Tytus Burgess. The reason it's so much fun to watch is not just because, you know, karaoke cannot happen now, although karaoke video games can, but they give you every part of it. It's as close to playing a karaoke video game as you can get without actually doing it. They show the lyrics on the screen. You can see as they get, like, the little dots get filled or not, depending on how good the singers are. And the best part is that, unlike with American Idol or The Voice, there's no pretension of like, and at the end of this, someone is going to get a recording contract. Like, it's just, these people are here for this episode and then they're out. That's it. There's no like season arc for any of them. It's just like one and done for trying to win this jackpot. And the theoretical max is $60,000. I think they all were around the like low $40,000 range. Tytus Burgess is, as we saw on Quibi's Dishmantled, a delightful game show host. Is this maybe what we want him to do? I don't know. He's fine. I'm sure it's not hard. I'm sure he made very, very easy money doing it. And it gave him a lot of chances to sing himself. And he's a great singer, so that is fun. And, you know, The Voice, I don't think has ever launched anyone's career anyway, so this is just as much fun to watch. The only part of it that's a problem is that, like, in the era of watch parties and, like, you know, the play-along Bandersnatch interactive things that you can do on Netflix, I don't know how you launch this game and don't somehow figure out how to let the viewer play along. I don't know how you would do this. That's not my job. That's your job, Netflix. Figure it out. Before season two comes along, make it so that I can play along with this game from my home. Now, I also want to just add as a sidebar. Also this week is The Masked Singer premieres. If you're listening to this podcast the day it came out, it premieres tonight. And then after it is another remake of a Korean show called I Can See Your Voice, which is hosted by Ken Jeong. I don't even know the premise of this. It's also a singing competition, but we were supposed to get screeners for it because I was going to be reviewing it for Primetimer. And last week, Fox was like, oh, yeah, we'll get them to you on Thursday or Friday. Did not come. Monday, still no screeners. Emailed like, hey, are you going to send screeners? Nothing. So I suspect either the show is a super duper bomb that they were like, oh, no, no one can see this before it premieres. Or Sing On just like totally ate its lunch. And if that is the case, good for Sing On because it's a delight. If you like singing shows or if you like singing, watch Sing On Netflix. There are 8 half-hour episodes and they are really dumb and fun. I reviewed it for Primetimer, which you can see in our plugs, but that is the sub plug. The main plug is that our book about Beverly Hills 90210 is out! Sarah and I wrote it!
We did. We wrote the hell out of it.
We really did. You've been able to pre-order it for a while, but now if you can actually physically go into a bookstore, you can do that and buy it. We will put the link, of course, in the show notes. You can buy a physical copy. You can buy it on an MP3. You can buy it on CD. You can hear us read it to you, which we did. That was crazy. So that is fun, and you should do that. We also have a virtual Beverly Hills 90210 trivia night coming up this Friday, September 25th, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, presented by McNally Jackson, a wonderful independent bookstore in New York. So we'll put the link to that in the show notes as well. But you can also go to, again, with this 90210.com/trivia to RSVP. It is free. There will be prizes. We pick them out ourselves. They are very silly.
Yes,
and
they
we
are.
Also added another special thing for listeners of the Again With This podcast. Sarah, do you want to mention this special thing that our Again With This listeners can start hearing this week?
I certainly do. We wrote 100 episode write-ups. 93 of them are in the book. We did have a page cap, after all. So we are reading those extras that did not make it into the final product for you on the, Again With This 90210 regular feed. We would love to have you as a Patreon supporter, but no need. Those will pop up in your feed, on Thursdays, right? Going forward.
Yes. Starting this Thursday. And speaking of the Patreon, we did a special episode last week on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/againwiththis, about the TV movie Death of a Cheerleader starring Tori Spelling as said cheerleader. It was a journey. It was probably my favorite one that we've done so far. So if you have held off on supporting that Patreon, you should go there if only to listen to that episode because it was super fun and really went places. So
yeah, it was a gooder.
All right, Meredith, what do you got?
I think I've watched all the TV that exists, it feels like, in quarantine, and I've somehow... I somehow have like whittled myself down to what I've been watching lately is reruns of Just Shoot Me on Hulu. And this is an anti-recommendation, I would say. Please don't do this to yourself. I've made a mistake. I don't know why I can't stop, but I can't stop. It's like you're just like reliving terrible 90s body norms. All the jokes are like about fat people or about how Laura San Giacomo's boobs are big. Like, it's a really hateful show, and I just would really like to warn people away from the quagmire that I found myself in. It's a very, like, humiliating exercise, basically. So, sorry to Enrico Colatoni, who, you know, I think is great in lots of stuff. Wendy Malick, who I'd like to be friends with. I'm sorry to Wendy Malick, but I'm not sorry to David Spade, because...
Ooh, never.
God. I just think they really... It was really like, it's 1997 and we would like to build a show around how this guy is horny and I'm sad, but I'm still watching it.
Yeah, that show just limped along forever, didn't it? Like, it was always on.
Yeah, it was on for so long and I don't feel like anybody particularly liked it or loved it. It really shows you the like pre, I don't know, like in the 90s and the early aughts, like, shows didn't have to be nice or like their characters. Often they were and they did, but they didn't have to. It was not a prerequisite. And so it's just like, this show seems to kind of hate everybody, including the viewer. And I hate myself. So
I'm sorry.
Don't watch it. You're welcome.
I won't.
Yeah.
We will link to your Twitter. Anything else that you want to plug?
Not really. I will soon be hosting a Google Home podcast. I think that's kind of terrifying, but Ooh. It's true. So if you have a Google Home, you can say at some point in October, something like, Google Home, tell me what Vox thinks about culture or something. And some days it'll be my voice saying stuff, but it's all to come. So
Neat.
More on that in the future.
And apologies for just setting off your Google Home, but you guys can deal with it. Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm here to talk about a documentary series about classic video games. It's on Netflix. It's called High Score. It's not great, but it's pretty good and it's pretty nostalgic. It sort of brings me back to an era in my life when pretty much everyone in my family was really good at the TI-400 cartridge version of Space Invaders, including the member of the family who cleared the entire game and like got a little certificate from like Texas Instruments headquarters. That would be my mom, Barb Bunting. Yeah, girl. The first episode is about Space Invaders and Pac-Man, and there's so much good like vintage visual stuff. The opening montage, which this is getting a little annoying that Netflix documentary series always do this, like just get to the meat of it and stop doing that fillery investigation discovery thing where it's like coming up and then there's like a pan and scan. But the guy who did the ET game, like it within the first minute is like, I made the worst video game in the history of the world. And then you get back into that in like a little later, and the process of that, and that he cheerfully just threw Steven Spielberg under the bus a couple of times in regards to the ET game was interesting. But I think, Dave, you should watch at least the first episode if you haven't already, just because, like, font-wise and visuals-wise, like, yeah. My brother, Dave, is currently obsessed with mid-century television sets, and there's, like, a lot of really good ones, so I told him to just, like, watch it on mute while he's at work. So, yeah, it's fun, and you forget how... You forget how, like, Pac-Man occupied fully, like, 38% of every Earth dweller's mind for a while there. And then after that, it was Super Mario. Yeah, it's fun. And the episodes aren't that long, and you can kind of half pay attention. I do have a question about who Netflix thinks this is for, because there's a narrator who is extraneous, in my opinion, but also at one point is like, never heard of Atari? We'll get back to it. And I'm like, is that a joke? Like, who who is so young? And I was talking about this with a friend of mine, that he's like, yeah, I think it's possible to be so young that you've never heard of Atari. And then his example was his six-year-old. And I was like, dude, really though? Like, who is watching this and doesn't know what Atari is?
Yeah.
That seems weird to me. I mean, I am also an old who coveted an Atari and did not get one.
Yeah, me too. I put little signs up all over my house saying, have you played Atari today? No, because my parents are too cheap. And then I put them all over the house. And it didn't win hearts and minds somehow, that campaign.
The reason we had a Texas Instruments... We had actually a stack of these computers because they were $99 each. So if it broke, you could just throw it out. The stack, my dad bought a stack of 10 and was like, this is better. And I'm like, it isn't though, because there's no pitfall. But we made do somehow with T.I.'s version of Ms. Pac-Man, which my mother also ruled at. She like had this weird phase with with the video games and... beat us all, big and small. So yeah, it's called High Score. Check it out. Here is my plug. There is some Mastass content I would like to share that is related to this episode. That's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, in which Mark Blankenship and I, spoiler, talk about songs. In episode 97 of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, we discussed charting TV theme songs of the 1990s, including The Heights, featuring one Jamie Walters. In episode 165, we ranked songs called Hold On, once again, Mr. Jamie Walters. We have to date not discussed the hip-hop works and days of one Brian Austin Green, but eventually we'll get to it. Jamie Walters seems to be a guardian angel or something to our podcast, which is not something I ever thought I would say. But that is related to our fine book, and you will find those links in the show notes. There will be one other Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs reference to come in this episode. Stay tuned.
This week on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show is the start of the playoffs. We're going to have three episodes for the playoffs before we hit the champions. In this episode, you'll hear Bobby Krutt, past and future guest on this show, try to think of what King's Landing is in Game of Thrones and calls it Swordly Town, which was, for me, the highlight of the episode. So for that and more, check out the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show at usaquizshow.com. And coming in November will be a special crossover episode called the Extra Hot Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, in which, guess what? Tara, Sarah, and from the Blankenship chair, Mark Blankenship, will play a game tailored for the extra hot, great crowd. So look for that around the election. So if you want to either celebrate or drown your sorrows in a podcast, we'll be there for you around the election. Speaking about extra hot, great, we have coming for you on Extra, Extra Hot, Great, two episodes coming for you in the following week. The first one is Important TV Punching Bags. And the second one is the Matlock episode I was threatening to make everybody watch. And that is happening. We heard about this episode where there is a murder and it involves like NBC somehow. And like all the stars of late 80s NBC are on this episode. And sure enough, they are, including Elf. So we'll talk about that. And let me just say, I want to talk about the consequences of having Elf in the role that he's on this show. Sort of open up a lot of existential and sort of Matlock universe questions, which I think we're going to have a tough time cracking. So look forward to that. And then on the next EHG Prime, we're talking about the US Utopia remake. That is not the reality show, but the sort of conspiracy drama from the UK that was from a couple years ago. That is with our new guest, Devendra Hardawar of Engadget and Slash Film Podcast. So look forward to that next week. It is time for the Canon user submission this week. Take it away, Lauren.
Today I'm submitting to the Canon Documentary Now, Season 3, Episode 3, titled Original Cast Album Co-op. This episode is a parody of a 1970 documentary, Original Cast Album Company, a film by D.A. Pennebaker. It's about the recording of the cast album of Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. It is, as advertised, 100% a Broadway cast recording documentary. It is also the most 1970s thing that ever 1970'd, even though I'm pretty sure it was filmed in 1969. But in prepping this entry, I was pretty sure that theater people would get it, but I was worried that it might not read to musical non-lovers. So I sat my show tunes hating husband down with my musical hating friend and made them watch the episode for some help. So in a bit of a different kind of canon submission, I'm going to list 5.5 comments that they made during this episode that I think make it canon worthy. Number one, wow, John Mulaney has some really specific interests, doesn't he? Mulaney clearly has a large space in his heart for 1970s New York and the cocaine-addled assholes who filled it. This episode definitely takes place in the same universe as the Oh, Hello, Guys. There's also a through line of Mulaney's love of making silly music. See the recent Sack Lunch Bunch crew. He just seems to be having a ball. And as an actor, John Mulaney makes a dinner of the character Simon Sawyer, the pompous, self-important Stephen Sondheim stand-in. Say that 5 times fast. Here he is with the always wonderful Renee Elise Goldsberry trying to make a realistically terrible slant rhyme work.
Hi, Judy. Hi, Dee Dee. You've been doing something wrong for about 3 weeks, and it's been annoying me. I wanted to talk to you about it right now. Let's see here. It's New York soap opera, and for love, stay tuned.
It's a New York soap opera, and for love, stay tuned. It's a New York soap opera, and my heart is ruined.
Nope,
it's
ruined.
And my heart is what?
Ruined. The word is ruined.
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 In my house, the word will forevermore be ruined. Comment number two. How are they so earnest? Even as a joke, I would die. Besides Mulaney, it's clear that everybody involved brought in 100%, probably 115%. Everything about this episode is so lovingly recreated. The sets, the clothes, the wigs, even all the orchestra members. It's shot in the same style of the original documentary. They went all in. They got real Broadway stars, Alex Brightman and Renee Elise Goldsberry, and a full orchestra. And clearly very talented singers. And everybody there is just so clearly having a ball. Throughout the episode, what really gets me is that everybody plays it seriously. The singers, when they're singing, the reaction shots, everybody is earnest, plus just a little bit extra. If you're inclined to rewatch, I would do a rewatch just focusing on Paula Pell's reaction and cutaway shots. It's pretty amazing. You know, a musical about a condo building is ridiculous, but also believable. It's not too far from what the show Company is actually about. And I can absolutely see Stephen Sondheim getting away with this in 1969. They get to the ridiculousness and heightened emotions, even of individual songs.
So in this part of the show, Dee Dee's character is trying to get an apartment in the building.
Right, so she's before the co-op board, but to her, she's just one of the tenants' tennis coaches. Mm. So it's a wish song.
It's also a co-op board meeting.
It's a fantasy fulfillment song, like My Boy Bill and Carousel, which is a flawed show, but it's still an I want that number.
Yes, it's also an application for an apartment number.
It's a bureaucratic apartment co-op board fantasy fulfillment song.
So in this part of the show, two, fantasy fulfillment song. And here's Goldsberry singing her I Want song.
I'm laying my dreams on you. I already bought a fondue. And the brown and the beige and the brown and the beige and the beige and the brown. With the brown and the beige and the brown and the beige.
The beige and the brown and the brown.
These are people who understand what makes a musical great, and they're able to make it so silly. Which brings us to number three. You know, if I wasn't paying super attention, I would believe this was an actual Broadway soundtrack. I think the writers were smart, and I think other people have pointed this out. The music in this episode is not quite Sondheim drag, but it's Sondheim adjacent. And they were smart in their construction of the episode. In the first couple of minutes, the director, played by Taryn Killam, announces to the cast that the show has been closed due to its terrible reviews. So the music itself doesn't actually have to be really good, just passable enough to make it to an opening night of Broadway, and bad enough to be panned when people actually get to see it. I've been through all these songs a number of times in preparing the submission, and let me tell you, they stick in your brain. They're funny and passable and bad all at the same time, and that's really hard to do. Here's Alex Brightman with my favorite song of the episode, and he has a bit of a quandary.
The whole room's spinning and I want to take a knee, but instead I'll sneak a bump as I hide behind the tree. I'm really very sorry that I can't stop talking. I'm so very sorry for my chirping and my squawking, but the fact of the matter is I did a little cocaine tonight. Oh man, here comes Anne. She's the athlete from 12G. She's the knees of the bees, always making eyes at me. It would seem such a dream if I asked her for a dance, but I just blew a rail and I'm gonna shit my pants.
Someone please give Alex Brightman and Renee Elise Goldsberry a show, hopefully together, and hopefully one where they can sing. There are so many songs that are great and I can't clip them all. Which brings us to point four. 4A, is there a supercut online somewhere of just the Richard Kind bits? And 4B, who was that lady with the eye thing? So to start, Richard Kind is a national treasure. He is fantastic in this with his showcase song Christmas Tips. Just to point out, the song is also kind of a masterclass in joke construction. It starts with a great setup.
Oh, you read the Times? So you think I can't sing fast, huh? Critics. This is why I don't read this shit, because it's beneath my vision. Like this one. In his show-stopping solo, Christmas Tips, Mr. Lonson provided the night's only dramatic moment. That is, would this actor, so clearly out of breath by the first stanza, be able to finish the fast-paced song, or would he suffer cardiac arrest on stage? Okay, allegro, presto, fasto.
The question set up is, can he make it through the song? The answer is no. It starts off kind of okay, but devolves pretty quickly.
One, two, three, I open the door, and I watch your lives and the things you do. So you better tip me, because I watch your lives. Mr. Adams, Mrs. Eve, this is your gift, I do believe. A tree planted in Tel Aviv, for your marriage I now grieve. You see only him and me, no, back when you were getting chemo. That nurse who was Filipino got knocked up with a bambino, and he shipped them off to Reno. And you should have tipped me better. better. At least 100 and a sweater, make it cashmere. There's a letter from the nurse that
and breath.
All breath.
I open the door. It's high five. One, two, three. I open the door and I want your lives, your private lives. Cooperate with me.
It is an amazingly physical performance, and you can feel the character's grit and frustration all the way through. Kind, who actually in real life probably has great breath control, just gives a great, hilarious performance. I'm into hit 4B. Paula Pell is just fantastic in her showcase, doing her best Elaine Stritch running out of patience.
I gotta go. Take 15.
I gotta go. Take 20.
I've gotta go. I gotta hail a pumpkin coach. Sake.
Take 22.
I wanna go. I wanna go to the eye doctor now, as previously stated, you pompous beta males.
I gotta go. Take 27.
You know what? I'm just gonna go. I hope you all have terrible lives. Thank you. Wonderful job, orchestra.
There's not a lot to analyze here. It's just great. Honestly, if you liked it, just Google Elaine Stritch Ladies Who Lunch. Great 10 minutes of your day. The last comment, number 5. I thought Fred Armisen was in the show. So in conclusion, I urge you to add this episode to the canon. It is a perfect self-contained bit of comedy. And when it's done right, a perfect bit of comedy is just perfect. Like any good musical, I'm going to close things out with the entire cast singing a way too tidy final song with some remarkable Aren't We Fun in-song patter. Oh, I hate myself. Yes, indeed, we are going up.
Care to take the stairs?
Yeah, right, I hate the stairs.
I mean, going down them isn't the worst, but going up.
Stairs in either direction is a nightmare.
God, I love elevators.
God, I love this co-op.
Me too.
Me three.
Going up. Co-ops do they cooperate? It's a hassle, but still somehow kind of great. So we're going up.
Going up.
Rising purgatory. Checking in on everyone and every story. Yes, we're going.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lauren, so much. Meredith, you chose this from our list of submissions. Why don't you start?
So I love this so much, and I loved it, which is why I picked it, but I rewatched it and was just like, I don't know, Lauren was right on all counts. I badly want to see Co-op, the fake musical, like so badly want to see it staged, which with mm-hmm. Richard Kind. It's really just like, I mean, the jokes, the songs being things that you could believe that people might actually sort of sing in the 70s and really good jokes about the 70s. I feel like they all ride that line, especially I did a little bit of cocaine tonight. The perfect reason to have everybody talk too fast in a way that, you know, might get your show canceled. And the brown and the beige, just truly a devastating indictment of 70s style. I also did a real nerdy thing, which was last night I watched original cast album Company to see. And you know what? It's not as good. It just doesn't hold up. Like, there's not the tension. The mm-hmm. show wasn't canceled. So I would say Co-op, better than Company.
Wow. Shots fired.
Yeah.
Sarah, why don't you go next?
We did a whole episode on this on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, episode 156. It'll be in the show notes. And we talked in that episode about a discussion that we on Extra Hot Great had about Documentary Now. Which is that it just comes from this place of like deep familial love for every genre and subgenre that it's dealing with, from Helen Mirren coming out and standing in this awkward pose in what looks like a Necropolis's library to be like, welcome to season 58, to the way that this is shot, to people's outfits, to making these songs like almost Sondheim-y enough, but then because they miss just by a little, they miss by a mile, and how difficult it is to do that, to like understand what makes a Sondheim song and then to do it at like an 82 instead of 100. Home Court is the song that I was thinking of. And the just like the gentle and loving, but also firm and distinct clocking of actor bullshit. Like Renee Elise Goldsberry is so good at that, just like with the eye popping and like any chance to oversing it. Even when she's getting a note that she's like, well, you know, let me just do that because that's what I do. And then he's like, okay, you know the word harpooned? I mean, that whole exchange is so good. Mulaney is so is like exactly that person who's like, hi, you suck. Let me explain this to you in a really convoluted way. And I mean, just little thing, Paul Appel just like banging into stuff after her eye appointment, and the fact that they go out on this song. And the guy who's like, me three, is the producer who like two scenes before is like, okay, this is the last song of Coop. And they've all been there for like 38 hours and they're like, come up. I mean, this is really so good on so many levels in the way that it observes the documentary genre, like the, you know, PBS shows like POV, you know, Company, Sondheim, musical theater people, Elaine Stritch. It's just, it's amazing. And I paid to download the cast album of Co-op. I, a known musical hater. So that's how, that's how good it is. It's really good. And this presentation was perfect, and what an interesting way into it. That was really good. Thank you, Lauren. Tara.
That was a spectacular presentation. When we got to the end of this episode, which I adore, and it had been on my list of like two canon, so I could go ahead and cross that off because Lauren did it and she did it perfectly. So many great points. The oh hello through line was something I hadn't considered, but she's so right that like, yes, this definitely is one of like John Mulaney's very specific weird like areas of interest, and I'm here for it too, so God bless. But every bit of casting and styling is so on point. Like, yes, him and James Urbaniak as the two writers of the show, and yes, like the way they're styled, Urbaniak's like his ascot, the wigs, and every time they show the orchestra and they're all in wigs and like in period costume too, like how hilarious that must have been for them. All of the casting is so great. It just makes me want to cry. The tennis pun song that Sarah mentioned, Home Court, is like so good for being so almost good and then bad. It's
but then
genius,
they make her sing Lob. Like, that's,
yeah,
what a perfect thing for this musical, that it's like that, you know, Lob and Fob, and you can see Goldsberry being like, why? Like, uh-huh, why do I have to sing this?
Yes. But she does it because she knows she's also like so gifted and knows where the comedy is in this too. Like I'm just convinced there isn't anything that she can't do.
Agree.
And then top of all that, the Richard Kind performance at the center. I mean, him and Paul Appel both doing the like the most comedic performances in, because they're the most like train wrecky ones. I mean, Lauren is right that Richard Kind probably does have excellent voice control. And, you know, I never have forgotten that, or breath control rather. And I've never forgotten something that my mother, who's a musician and a singer, once said, which is that, you know, in order to really sell a performance of a bad song, you have to be really good at singing in order to be able to like be convincing that you're doing it bad. But also like Paul Appel has to do it. She has to do the bad version and then she has to do the great version. And her great version is so good too. Like, she's such a great singer too, in addition to doing the, you know, the crazy angry version that I want to go, as previously mentioned, you beta males. And if you enjoy Paula Pell in this, please, I implore you, go on Peacock and watch AP Bio, because she is so great in her role as Helen on that show. I feel like it's still such a slept on show, and it's so, so funny. And she is especially great in it. So there's nothing else to say. And ending on, hey, I thought Fred Armisen was in this show anyway, like, perfect. Because there would have been such an opportunity for him to come into this, especially since it's a musical and he's a musical guy, to like just Armisen all over it, mm-hmm. and like just choke it with how he is, just to be too much. And the fact that they knew that, and somebody was able to like sit him down and be like, look, dude, no, is the best part of it, perhaps, because it really, I can't imagine it having worked as well if he was in it. So thank you, Lauren, for bringing this to us. And God, if you haven't seen this, everyone listening to this, get on Netflix and watch it. It's so great. Dave.
Yeah, everybody said it, but being good at being bad is so hard. Like,
yeah,
emulating naive art or just like badness is like a real trick. Like, I remember way back, maybe like 15 years ago now, I was charged with making a website look like a dawn of internet website, you know, like GeoCities tripod and all that. Aww. Rainbow rules, everything centered, gray background. Really shitty animated GIFs of like little construction signs for the parts that aren't done. Like, it was supposed to look like that. And it's really hard to make it look genuine, because you're working against all your best practices. And you know the things that go into making something subpar, but it's really hard to work against yourself doing it. And to not only do that, but like hit that perfect spot on that spectrum where it's just bad enough, but just good enough to be passable, at the same time being entertaining with the lyrics and the presentation, is like such a needle to thread. It's like such a small window there that I'm always impressed every time we watch this that they pulled it all off on like every song. Like, they're all like, I hate musicals. Yeah. I think musicals are dumb. I love this episode. This is by far my favorite Documentary Now episode. And I like, even like one musicals I thought like, okay, I'll give that a shot, like Book of Mormon, like there was a quarter of Book of Mormon I thought was good and the rest of it was crap. The back half of Book of Mormon, I could like never watch it again. And there's good stuff in the first half, like, eh. And musicals just seem silly to me all the time. But so I say that not to really shit on musicals, because I know people like them, but more that this documentary about a musical that is like half the musical and various bits and pieces is super entertaining, is very funny. It is obviously made with such love, like just like the digital fake film grading they do to everything after to make it look like it was shot in that time period is
of co-op
on. Like, you don't notice it. A lot of the times they overdo it, or it's not quite right, or it's a little too crisp. Like, they did everything. Like, they gave the lens a good vignette and they sort of softened it just enough. And it really seemed like somebody was there filming with some shitty film reel, and that's what you got out of it. Special props to my gym buddy, Richard Kind. We went to the same gym on the Upper West Side when I lived there. And he does have good breath control, because I would often be on the treadmill next to them. And you'd think maybe he would be a panter, because he's a big dude and, you know, he's got a gut. But, you know, he held his own just fine. I think I was probably panting more than him. And he's really nice. I actually talked to him once or twice while there, just like, nothing big, but just like, you know, the chat about gym stuff and how sucky exercise is and things like that. And he's a genuinely nice guy. And just knowing that whole story with like him and Clooney and the litter box joke and all that kind of stuff, like, you know, he's your people, right? And just seeing him in this, where he's just kind of allowed to run amok, is a joy. So I really like this. If you've slept on Documentary Now, the whole series is good, but this episode in particular is like their masterpiece, I think. So it's definitely going to be a yes for me.
Definitely.
So let's put this to the official vote. Meredith, your vote?
Yeah. Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting?
Going up. It's a yes for me.
And Tara Ariano?
Absolutely yes.
That that means Documentary Now, Season 3, Episode 3, Original Cast Album, Co-op, you're hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has the winner.
Well, my winner is Emmy People and Things, although I do have some losers mixed in here. This is a bit of a roundup, so bear with me. Maya Rudolph won her first two Emmys in the same week. She won for voicing the hormone monstrous on Big Mouth and also for guesting on SNL. Schitt's Creek completed a clean Emmy sweep in its final season. Is this the Toronto area-based sitcom that was nominated that should have won all those Emmys? No, it should have been What We Do in the Shadows, but whatever. Happy for people that love that show. Moving on. Ron Cephas-Jones and Jasmine Cephas-Jones became the first ever same-year father-daughter Emmy winners. He won for This Is Us. She won for Quibi's Free Rayshon. More about Quibi. Stay tuned. However, his moment was kind of ruined by a technical glitch that caused the name of Jason Bateman, who was nominated in the same category for The Outsider, to appear when Cephas-Jones' win was announced, which not great. Cheer, the Netflix show, won an Emmy for Outstanding Unstructured Reality Series 24 hours after the breakout star Jerry Harris was arrested on child pornography charges.
Oh, God.
Rick and Morty won Outstanding Animated Series, meaning they beat BoJack Horseman in that show's final season. Zendaya became the youngest person ever to win Best Actress in a Drama for Euphoria. No asterisk on that one. That's just nice for her. I don't watch that show, but she looked very pretty. The Emmys set a record for most wins by Black actors. However, they also set another record, which is for least watched telecast ever, which, not a surprise, it was the Zoom Emmys. Like, it was weird. So, you know, that's how it goes, I guess. But yeah, that's the Emmys.
What was the name of that award for, was it Unstructured Reality Show?
Yeah.
How clinical. Weird name. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we used to, it's what we used to call candid reality,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. And so. Loser League?
Tara and Dave, you may remember almost 20 years ago when I lived in Toronto and I, as a joke, which no one found funny except me, would come into your living room, snap an American $20 bill over my head and say, "Who wants to buy a car?" That's what's happening right now with Quibi, basically. Despite somehow having won an Emmy, they are looking to sell less than 6 months after launching. Just leave it at the curb and let it die, Jeffrey Katzenberg. You tried.
Yeah, what the hell? Like, who would want to buy that?
The thing is, and I've said this before, like, they have, basically, they're, for example, their comedy shows are like, regular comedy shows cut into thirds. So anyone could buy that intellectual property and then just, like, glue them together and put them on a regular network. So, you know, like, Hulu could do that instead of having them be six-minute shows. It could just be an 18-minute show, and I wish they would because, again, speaking of Paula Pell, she has, like, a Murder, She Wrote spoof that I would like to see. I'm not fucking buying Quibi. So, yeah. You know, I hope someone has the sense to, like, you know, buy some of these shows for parts and then put them together into regular-ass shows that normal people watch in the normal way that shows are watched, but I don't see that happening.
It's just truly the least appealing product of all. I don't want to watch stuff on my phone. Like, and I don't like the name Quibi. It makes me annoyed every time. I think it should be like a food delivery service. Those are quick bites.
Yeah.
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 Agreed. Speaking about things that should be food delivery services, do you know what time it is? It's game time. It's game time. Welcome back to Game Time. This is the seventh Game Time of the season. The standings currently sit as such. Tara 3, Sarah 2, Value Guess 1. Today we are playing More Filthy Riches from the good folks who follow the Twitter account at EHG Assist. Oh. And they earned themselves a crowdsourced extra credit topic of their crowdsourcing. This format is a little bit different in that it is dead simple and will go fast. You won't have much time to answer. Either you know it or you don't. I will give you the name of a rich character from TV. You name the show. Some are easy, some are not. No clues, except that I've organized all the questions alphabetically by answer. So your first answer is going to start with an A. And as we get down, the further into the game we get, the further into the alphabet the answers will start with.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right. Let's throw to Picky to see who will be starting us off.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Our order is Tara, Meredith, Sarah. Are we ready to play More Filthy Riches?
Should we hear the steel meal situation?
No steel meals, no score breaks, no equalizer challenge zones, 69 questions. That's what we're doing today. Okay. Are we ready now to play More Filthy Riches?
Nice.
Yes.
Here we go.
Nice. Yes, we are.
Tara. Okay. Whitley Gilbert.
A Different World.
Meredith. Gomez Adams.
The Adams Family.
Sarah. Cheryl Tunt.
Archer.
Tara. Stan Sitwell.
Arrested Development.
Meredith. Oliver Queen.
Nope. Don't know it.
Arrow. Sarah. William Edgars. Parentheses, good luck.
William Edgars.
Yes.
At Ascent. I don't know.
Babylon 5. Tara. Eugene Gatling.
Benson.
Nice.
Meredith. Jed Clampett.
Oh, Beverly Hillbillies.
Sarah. Dylan McKay.
Beverly Hills, 90210.
Buy our book.
Tara. Bobby Axelrod.
Billions.
Meredith. Nucky Thompson.
I'm stumped.
Boardwalk Empire.
Oh yeah.
Sarah. Mr. Fish Odor.
BoJack Horseman?
Ooh, close. Bob's Burgers.
That was close.
Tara.
Yeah.
Gus Fring.
Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad. R.I.P.
For Meredith. Richard Castle. Good luck. Richard
Castle.
Castle. Yeah, there you go. Sarah D. Bunting. Robin Colcord.
Cheers.
Colcord.
Robin Colcord.
Colcord. Robin. What are you, Stephen Toast?
Yes, Robin Colcord.
God damn.
Tara.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Plimpton III.
Nope.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, right.
Meredith. J.R. Ewing.
Dallas.
Sarah D. Bunting. George Hurst.
Deadwood?
Tara. Gabrielle Solis.
Desperate Housewives.
Meredith. We're talking Greg Montgomery.
Oh, Darman Greg.
Sarah. Nice. Philip Drummond.
Different Strokes.
There we go. 2 day points for remembering how to say it. Tara.
Cute. Yep.
Patrick Tripp, Darling.
Darling. Oh, Dirty Sexy Money.
Nice pull.
Meredith. Robert Crawley.
I am not sure, but I'm going to guess Dynasty.
That was a good guess.
I tried.
That is Downton Abbey, although I will put an asterisk on that because, you know, all that his money was actually his wife's money. So,
right.
But it's his money now. Thanks, olden times. Sarah D. Bunting. Scrooge McDuck.
DuckTales.
Woo!
Tara.
Yep.
Dominique Devereaux.
Dynasty.
That's Dynasty, correct.
Yeah.
Meredith. Lucius Lyon.
Empire.
Sarah D. Bunting. John Carter.
ER.
Thank God.
Tara.
Yes.
Blair Warner.
Facts of Life.
Meredith. Carter Pewterschmidt.
I don't remember.
That is Family Guy. Back to Sarah. Maris Crane.
Frasier.
You ought to know your Frasier. Tara. Philip Banks.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Meredith. Pete Becker.
I don't know.
Kind of a tough one. Tara, do you know this one?
I feel like I should, but it's
you should.
Escaping me.
It's Friends.
Oh, right.
Oh, Jon Favreau.
Pete Dakota.
Yeah.
Remember to use the alphabetical organization of your answers to your benefit. Getting back to Sarah. Mom.
Huh?
Mom.
Mom?
M-O-M. Mom.
I don't know. Fuller House.
Futurama. Tara.
Oh, okay.
Tywin Lannister.
Game of Thrones.
Meredith. Thurston Howell III.
Gilligan's Island.
Sarah, good luck on this one. Richard Gilmore.
Gilmore Girls?
Tara. Bash Howard.
Oh, Glow. God. I almost said Veronica Mars because I was picturing him.
Meredith. Tahani Al-Jamil.
The Good Place.
Sarah. Chuck Bass.
Gossip Girl.
Tara. Pacifica Northwest.
Popular? I have no idea.
Gravity Falls. Pacifica.
Oh, sure.
Meredith. Jackson Avery. Last answer was Gravity Falls.
Gravity Falls, yeah. I'm like, what's the alphabet? fair enough.
Answer we were looking for, Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, right.
Back to Sarah. Jennifer Hart.
Hart to Hart?
Nice.
Raphael Solano.
Jane the Virgin.
Meredith. Trish Walker.
Nope. Sorry.
A.K.A. Hellcat, I believe, from Jessica Jones.
Oh.
Sarah D. Bunting. Devin Miles.
Knight Rider?
This is for, this is for Tara. Jonathan Rollins.
The K show. Knights of Prosperity. Correct.
Wow.
Not correct.
LA
That'll
Law.
Get you a Sarah point, though, for sure.
That was LA Law. Back to Meredith. Elena Richardson.
Elena Edward. I am not sure. Law and Order.
Little Fires Everywhere. Back to Sarah. Hugo Hurley. Hugo or Hurley?
Lost.
Tara.
Yep.
William Brathwaite.
Lusts of the Flesh. I don't know.
Lovecraft Country.
Oh, right.
Meredith. Robin Masters.
Oh, this is on the tip of my brain.
Last answer was Lovecraft.
Was Lovecraft Country.
Robin
Lubbock,
Masters.
Lubbock, Texas. I'm not sure. No. Yeah.
Robin Masters, possibly also Higgins from Magnum P.I. Sarah Bunting, Maxwell Sheffield.
Maxwell Sheffield.
Correct.
I don't know. Masterpiece Theater.
The Nanny. Tara. Oh. Jimmy James.
News Radio.
Correct. Meredith. Caleb Nickel.
Oh, the OC.
Sarah D. Bunting. Schneider.
One Day at a Time.
Correct. The reboot. Tara. Bobby Newport.
Parks and Recreation.
Meredith. James Ghost St. Patrick.
Nope. Yeah, Ghostwriter? No. Yeah.
That's from Power.
Oh.
Back to Sarah. Margot Kramer.
Margot Kramer. Oh. I don't know. Prophet?
Punky Brewster.
Okay.
Oh. Back to Tar.
Yep.
Hiram Lodge.
Riverdale.
Correct. Meredith. Nelson Bighead Baghetti.
Silicon Valley.
Correct. Sarah. Edward Stratton III.
Silver Spoons.
Tara, here's a tricky one for you. Ricky Stratton.
Silver Spoons.
Sure, Silver Spoons. Okay. Heir to the Stratton fortune.
Okay.
Meredith. Montgomery Burns.
The Simpsons.
Sarah. Lionel Luther.
Smallville.
Tara. Aline Rand.
Oh, no. I know it. Oh, no. Oh, smash! Smash.
Nice.
Oh, smash. Thank God.
Nice. Back to Meredith. Logan Roy.
Oh, not the opposite of Billion. Succession. She says the same coin.
Sarah. London Tipton.
London Tipton.
Correct.
It's quite a handle.
The Sopranos.
I don't know.
That was The Suite Life of Zach and Cody.
Oh.
Everybody's last question coming at you.
Oh, Tara. Shit.
Yep.
Walden Schmidt.
Two and a Half Men.
Wow.
Meredith. Reginald Hargraves.
Nope, I don't know.
That's from The Umbrella Academy. And our last question under regulation, Russ Snyder for Sarah.
Russ Snyder?
Correct. Russ, R-U-S-S.
Wendigo? I don't know.
That was Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and that were our 69 rich guy.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice.
Characters. Let's get those scores, please, Tara.
Very close game. Meredith finished with 12 points. Sarah had 16. I had 19.
All right. Well done, Tara. I have the tiebreaker. First person to shout out the show will get a steel meal for future use. Are you ready?
Yes.
This is open to everybody. Here we go.
Okay.
We're still following the answer, so it's going to be somewhere in the alphabet after Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Okay.
Lady True.
Watchmen.
Correct. That is from Watchmen. Tara nice. Gets the extra point and today's game.
Tara!
Tara. Tara. Congratulations.
Well done.
Woo! Speed round. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. We only had one job to do, and that was to crunch the numbers and sit as judges and give revelations about the chronicles of the Monroes of Filthy Rich. We then went around the dial with stops at Sing On, Just Shoot Me, and High Score. Lauren got approved for the co-op episode of Documentary Now being in the Extra Hot Crate canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from at EHG Assist on Twitter. Next up, TV's Punching Bags and Matt Dog on the next two Extra Extra Hot Crates, and on the next EHG Prime, it's Utopia. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Tekel, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
And the brown, and the beige, and the brown.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I want to go.
And Meredith Haggerty.
Just smoking a cigarette at the top of the steps.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Here in our co-op.
Whose package is this? Something from overnight insulin emergency providers? Going once? Twice? Nope. Okay, garbage time. Bye-bye, box.